Ovule, a sci-fi horror fiction podcast, written, narrated, and produced by Brian W. Alaspa. Chapter 9.
Hello? Hello? Is there anybody out there? Is anyone receiving? Hello? I've managed to get into this radio station, and I don't even know if I'm doing this right. And I'm also not sure how long before those zombie people find me and maybe they take me. I just wanted you to know there are others of us out there. There are other uninfected people. We're out there. We have to unite, and we have to fight. Keep going as best in any way you can. There's some reports that I'm hearing that the infected have some kind of weird disease or ailment going on, and they seem to be slowing down or something. I haven't actually seen it myself, but I've heard reports. There are pockets of resistance in Denver and Chicago and New York and Los Angeles and Washington, and those are just the ones that I know personally. If you have a radio and you can get on the air, that's fine. If you hear this, get a shortwave radio and listen to the broadcasts. Find us. We can do this.
Dave, it's afternoon, Dave, and Neil and I are all that's left as far as people who want to try and strike back against the infected. I'm in the parking garage of the office building right now, and Neil and I spent the entire morning doing some final repairs and testing of the truck's engine. It's running better, but it still might be very touch and go. The others who were with us, the ones who were alive, said they wanted to head out tonight. They're waiting for the sun to go down, and then they plan on leaving Denver. I asked them where they were going, but they say they didn't want to tell us. None of us are sure if memories of those who become infected become part of the hive mind or not, and I respected that. I wish them well, and I hope Neil and I can also leave this place once the sun goes down. I've had my fill of the mountains. I'm ready to go somewhere as isolated as possible. Speaking of darkness, that's when Neil and I plan on hitting the stadium. It would be crazy to try this during the day. We've been watching the stadium through our binoculars, and they have drones and other small aircraft circling around and around the place during the day. I have no idea if they have more during the night. I suppose it's possible. I wish I could do more testing, of course. I wish I had a way to build a target as tall as the stadium. The one test we did is not enough. What if all these bottles just smash against the side of the stadium and no flames ignite within it? The flammable liquid burns the wooden struts of the target we built. That's great, but it will do nothing to the stone of the stadium if it just bursts on the outside. We won't be able to fire these into the base of the stadium and cause it to collapse. It just won't work. There's still so many questions, Dave. It frustrates me that I will likely never get answers. It seems like every time I record this, I have more questions. I have a shotgun and a pistol, too. Even a damn hunting knife. And suddenly, I look like a survivalist. I guess if a survivalist is someone who tries to continue surviving when everything else goes to hell, I guess I am. I just want one bomb to blow up, Dave. Just one strike. I just want to be able to get one blow against the infected and the aliens or the whatever this is that infected us. I just want to strike back in some way. What if word gets around other people in other cities because of this one thing? I listened to my radio this morning, and it sounded like there were more ham radios up and running, but also someone else broadcasting on a local station. Are the infected slowing down? My theory, because you can never truly remove the scientist from me, I guess, is that they are focused on bringing in more people to infect. I see those weird rashes on the infected skin, and I think that maybe the virus that infected them has mutated within those human hosts. Once again, I'm thinking of the old H.G. Wells story, War of the Worlds, how the viruses drove them back. What if the spores interacting with the human immune system has created a reaction? Or, another theory, the spores just naturally progress to this. The infected slow down and the spores find a way to leave the body, find another way to infect people. Maybe they just all float up into the sky. Hell, these are alien spores. Maybe they can launch themselves into space. The ridiculous has become the norm, so why rule it out? Those spores got here. They must have some way to get other places. Maybe what Neil and I do today can inspire others. Maybe we can make this harder for the infected and for those aliens. It's something to cling to, anyway. Sun has gone down now. Dave, Neil, and I have talked, spent the entire afternoon tinkering with the truck. We've got it loaded with weapons and some shielding now in case they start firing at us. The thing looks like something out of a dystopian movie or something. Maybe something from that Road Warrior Mad Max movies or something. My stomach is full of knots and I'm nervous. I'm not sure I'll be back tonight. I might be captured or I might be dead. Neil and I talked about whether or not we should kill each other if we appear to be captured or about to be captured. We never quite reached a decision, but it might be something we do. I'd rather be dead than part of that hive mind. If we get back, one of us starts coughing, like somehow we've managed to get infected, maybe we need to think about doing the same thing. Couple of bullets, maybe. I keep thinking about Dr. Grossman, and I'm assuming she's still in the stadium. She's still working the lines and crossing people off the lists. I think back to the woman I met back at Mountain View, that doctor that I met. She was a dedicated person, trying hard to bring medicine and medical help to the people of that very tiny town. She was a bit abrupt and to the point, but she had a genuine curiosity and intentions to help people. She seemed mostly respected to, although everyone wanted to dismiss her when she started warning them about the flowers and the meteors and the spores. I should have learned more about her. I was so focused on trying to get to the bottom of the meteors and the flowers and the infections, I never asked her where she came from. Why did she end up in that tiny town in the middle of nowhere? Why Colorado? Too many regrets about things. They're mounting up as much as the questions. I need to go out with a bang if I can. I want to fight. I want to light them up. I feel bad Dr. Grossman might be among those who end up dead, but I can't help but shake the idea that she would prefer that over being part of the hive mind. Hell, if I could find a way to shoot her dead, I probably would. As you can tell, I've given up on the idea of curing these people. I guess that's gone out the window. I don't believe they're still within there. I think this virus makes the person who was in there before just disappear. Perhaps it completely rewrites their DNA or changes them from human to some plant life human hybrid. Anyway, I'm looking at my watch and 0 hours, a few minutes away. We're going to try to burn them down, burn them out, and destroy as many as we can. I hope we succeed, and I hope maybe the word gets out. Well, Dave, hello. Well, we did it. We set the stadium on fire. My God, I can turn around and I can still see it burning. It was hours ago now when we started, and it's still burning. It took me more than an hour to stop shaking and even hold the recorder here, and I'm still shaking. My God, where do I even start? We headed out 15 minutes after my last recording or my call or my report. We got into the truck, and I got into the back and loaded up the catapult. The truck started like a dream, and we had fixed the engine so it so much and worked so hard on it that it was almost purring like a kitten, barely audible. We drove out of the garage into the darkness, and the streets were deserted and just so quiet. It made me hyper-paranoid, as I felt even with the quietness of the engine, we would echo and be too loud. I felt like eyes were watching me from every house and every building. So I kept down low, behind the metal shielding we had put up on the sides of the truck. Neil kept quiet, drove around in a wide circle, eventually finding the most abandoned street leading to the stadium. I watched through a space in the shielding, and we just kept edging closer, and edging closer, and closer still. Now, as we got within a block or so, we could hear the buzzing. You know, the infamous buzzing. The insect-like noise that they seem to make with their bodies, as if every one of the infected can vibrate all their cells at once and create this insane sound. And the sounds of trucks. How could there still be so many trucks, I wondered. How could they still be so full? I suddenly had the irrational hope that maybe trucks were coming from other cities. Maybe this really was the new headquarters from the infected, and maybe if we could just start that fire, we really would cripple them in some way. Foolish thought, of course, but I was nervous and trying to cling to some form of hope and steel myself for what was about to come. As we entered the parking lot, we drove the perimeter. Nobody seemed to notice us. We avoided the area where the trucks were coming and going, and kept to the much of the shadows as we could. It seems that parking lot light maintenance is not high on the infected's agenda, so there were a lot of dark patches. And Neil turned down one of the aisles, the aisles in the parking lot there, the one with a number of broken lights overhead, so that we were in maximum shadow. It was the far side from where the trucks were coming, and again, nobody was walking. There were no patrols. There was nothing in the air. There were no drones. Nothing. We were just in darkness, creeping up in the night air to the stadium full of the infected. So I stood up, manning the controls of the catapult. Neil had his guns ready. I felt like throwing up, and it was all I could do to not start launching those firebombs way too soon. We had to wait, hold steady, wait until we were within the dark shadow of the stadium, a shadow that was somehow darker than the darkness we were already in. Every sound made me jump. I could hear the trucks and men talking and shouting. The buzzing from within was more powerful than before. Finally, Neil called out, "Now," he said. So I let the catapult go, having already lit the fuse when we turned into the parking lot. It launched. The sound it made felt so loud. I thought sure that everyone would hear, that the stadium would just get up and peer over the edge. All the infected would just come look at us. But it would have been barely audible, I suppose, to anyone standing near the engine of one of those military trucks. It was like watching 4th of July fireworks as it tumbled and turned into the sky. It had the height, I could see that, but did it have the distance? Would this smash against the outside of the stadium? Would that ruin the rest of the operation? I held my breath, and it seemed to take forever. Wondered if I was going to pass out. But then the bottom of the bottle hit the very lip of the stadium wall. I gasped, but then the bottle tipped into the stadium, and there was a very faint, probably imagined, but I swear I heard the sound of glass breaking. Again, maybe I imagine it, I don't know, but there was a whoosh that I definitely heard, and then there was fire over the edge of the stadium. I could see it clear as day. I ducked down and reloaded the catapult and set the second one flying. Now the world seemed to go into fast forward, the exact opposite. The buzzing inside reached an insane crescendo. The second firebomb flew over the top of the stadium and burst. Neil hit the gas and we were gone so fast I nearly fell out the back of the truck. We heard yelling from within as the infected who were in charge of the lines began to notice what was happening. I also heard screaming from people who had been brought to the stadium in the trucks, uninfected people who now looked up to see a ever-widening path of fire. A rim of fire beginning to form across the top of the stadium. Neil drove around to the opposite side, moving fast and hard. We could hear the running footsteps, but the soldiers and cops were headed for the side of the stadium already burning, where we had just been and were now gone. We were on the other side by the time they got there, and I quickly sent two more Molotov cocktails into the stadium. The buzzing rose and rose in pitch. I mean, it was almost like a shrieking noise. Something horrifying you felt in your chest. rattled your bones. Neil was ready to head off to another area of the stadium, but I heard bullets whizzing past and realized the cops had gone to the top of the stadium walls, and now they were shooting down at us. I quickly reloaded and sent a firebomb into the exits at the bottom of the stadium, creating a wall of fire I hoped would slow them down from trying to get out after us into the parking lot. Neil wasn't ready to stop. We headed around to another side, but now there were running feet all around us and more guns. I fired a shotgun blast into a team of soldiers, then hurled a firebomb into them for good measure. The gun blast and fire helped clear a bit of a path. It was enough for us to burst through their line and for me to get another shot up into the air and over the top of the stadium. The third bomb exploded. Or was it the fourth bomb? My God, how many bombs did I throw? I can't even remember. I think this might have been the third or fourth that actually made it into the stadium. It exploded, and there was more fire. "We need to get out of here," I cried to Neil. He waved, said nothing, and stomped on the gas. As we headed around the side of the stadium, I saw more of the infected running out. There, amid the soldiers and police officers in uniform, was a woman in medical scrubs. It was dark on the side of the stadium. Heck, it was dark all the way around the stadium. Like I said, they don't seem to want to care about lights or electricity. I was not then, and I'm not really sure now if it was Dr. Grossman, but it was a close resemblance from what I could see. I grabbed my shotgun and I aimed and fired. I saw this woman go down, her arms flailing, but I was barely able to aim properly because Neil was driving so fast. A moment after the shot went off, I went down hard and the back of the truck hit my head on the edge of the truck bed. That's when I heard bullets ricocheting off the metal shielding. The sound of bullets whizzed past my head and I felt hot pain in my right foot. I heard Neil yelling and returning fire, but I couldn't raise my head to see what was happening. All I could do was just hang on tight as he drove off. I heard cars behind us. I heard yelling, and then I could also hear screaming. I had no idea what was happening. We drove for blocks, making sharp rights and left, once turning around completely to drive back the way we had come. Eventually, the truck slowed down and then came to a complete stop. The engine was still running, and I raised my head over the edge of the truck bed. Somehow, we were alone. Somehow, Neil had managed to shake them for the moment, and we were in a parking lot. Overhead, the lighting was burned out and dark. I could hear sirens and engines in the distance, squealing tires, and I had no idea if they were headed for where we were or not. I jumped down and walked around to the driver's side, and that's where I found Neil, slumped over, his body over the wheel, at least two bullets in his back that I could see in the dimness. There was the strong scent of blood, and I could see it all over the interior of the truck. I reached in and did my best to feel for a pulse, and there wasn't any. He was gone. I don't know. He must have taken those bullets in the parking lot and still managed to drive all over the town, all over the city, up and down, left and right, turning around. He still managed to lose them and get us to that parking lot. I don't know if I could ever have that kind of strength. I turned around to inspect where we were, and I could still see the top of the stadium, flames rising into the sky. I could feel the buzzing from the infected still in my chest, and in my bones, and in my body, and in my head. It sounded to me like the sirens were getting closer, so I decided it was best to just start running. I had my shotgun, but only about 3 shells left. I dodged and ducked, running from one area of shadow to the next. I don't know how. I really don't know how. Some primitive instinct, some strange part of my brain that I never knew I had, able to tell distance and when to turn and where to go, like some internal map. I managed to get back to the office building we had been staying in and using as a kind of hiding place. I found a way in through a side door and walked back to the floor we had been living in for days. It was so dark then, inside then, as well as out, and quiet. The others we were with had already gone, and I made my way to the office we'd use as a lookout and watched. I could see police lights and trucks with bright spotlights running up and down the streets, searching every nook and cranny they could find. And here I am now watching them as they drive up and down. I think they found the truck with Neil in it. At one point, I saw a cluster of the lights hovering in one spot for quite a while. Are they aware that there were 2 people in there? Or do they think that somehow he was firing those from within the truck? I don't know. I can hardly stop to think that I'm safe at this point. I can still see the flames from the stadium burning. So many people burning. So many people in there. Thousands. I guess I'll never know how many were burned, or if any got out. I don't even know if I actually shot Dr. Grossman. But I know this. I struck back, Dave. I did it. I burned them. I hoped to feel more of a victory, but I lost Neil in the process, and I'm on my own again. Tomorrow, I'll be on my way. I don't know where I'm going, or if I'll even make it beyond the city limits, but I'm still alive. Looks like I have a bullet wound in my ankle. I'll bandage that before trying to get some sleep. Maybe I'll have a few good dreams tonight. Hello again, Dave. It's been a while. I feel like I've hardly spoken in days, weeks. It's been more than 2 weeks, I guess. How you doing? No, I haven't entirely lost my marbles. I know you won't reply. The city of Denver is now far behind me. When I last looked back, there was still smoke rising from the football stadium. There were still trucks filled with soldiers and cars filled with cops running around the street. Once again, it reminded me of hornets or wasps. They send out soldiers to defend the nest when you set them on fire. For example, you set the nest on fire by pouring gasoline or kerosene on it. But what do they do when they return to the burning nest? They just buzz around, try to find another place to build a hive. The infected were so busy chasing their tails, I walked out of town pretty much unmolested. Never once did I run into another uninfected person, though. Not sure if they all just up and left town or they're now too scared to come out. No one else claiming to be from the resistance showed up to talk to me. I don't know what any of that means. I just know I grabbed as much stuff as I could as far as provisions and necessary items and kept walking. I guess I've become a bit of an outdoorsman now in addition to a survivalist. Still not quite ready to shoot animals for my food, but I have done some fishing and got past my queasiness about ripping out fish guts. You learn fast when you have to, I guess. I've been out in the wilderness for a few nights, learned to make a fire, get a comfy tent, managed to stay warm. I hit houses when I can. I was back in suburbia for a little while, found more flowers, but many of them were dead now, turning back into the gray substance they grow from. Things went like that for a while until last night. It was my journey into this little town last night which caused me to want to record this today. I wandered in just like I always did, cautious and uncertain. First house was empty, and I gathered some canned food and got some water. Made myself a sandwich. The same happened at the second and third house, minus the sandwich, of course. My backpack was pretty full by then, and I nearly just left, but I decided to check one more house. A big one at the far end of this dead-end street. I stepped inside, and immediately there was a smell that made me want to put on my protective gear. I got the mask, gloves, and coverings on while standing on the porch. I grabbed the pistol I've tucked into my belongings. I stepped into the large living room, and I gasped. There were 10 people there. They were completely overgrown. I don't know how else to put it. It looked like they had actually become part of the furniture. There were 5 side by side on the couch, 2 more in a chair, and another on the floor, 3 crammed onto a love seat. The floor and furniture were covered in the gray substance and the remnants of flowers. The red spots on the exposed skin of the infected were still there, but the red had faded. Now gray dominated, and flowers grew right out of their flesh, literally bursting through the skin. Skin of their faces, through their mouths, nose, the top of their head. And it spread to all the furniture, and it's like they had merged, were becoming part of the furniture, melting into it. It's just like those damn zombie ants. The more spores were bursting through their skin, forming more flowers. This group must have been locked up for some time, and with no one new to infect, the flowers had just died. I thought they were all dead and was about to leave. The horror of what I was looking at, almost too much to comprehend, when a man on the sofa suddenly moved. He raised a hand, just a fraction of an inch, and moaned. His eyes came open behind the mask of flowers and grayness that covered his face and his eyelids, his forehead. He couldn't say anything. And his mouth hung open, and the insides looked lined with more of the gray stuff, and maybe even flowers? Whatever they were before, He was no longer that thing now, and by that I mean they might have been emotionless robots, but not now. Now his eyes were filled with pure terror. I didn't know what else to do, so I aimed my gun and shot him through the forehead. There was no buzzing, no releasing of spores. Just silent. I decided I needed to see more, and I walked through the house. I found 4 more in the bedroom, 2 more in the bathroom, 3 more in the kitchen. Some of them had disintegrated into blobs. Just shapeless blobs covered with rotted flowers and gray dust. I touched one with my shoe, and the entire gray mass just collapsed to the floor with a soft shushing sound. So this is what the world has come to. Just like I'd always, I don't know, did I hope for it or just think it? Whatever the spores are, they apparently cannot sustain life within humans. Or this is just the natural progression of things. But I'm starting to believe it's the former. I wonder if this has happened on every other planet. Maybe they just use up their hosts and turn them into nothing, to dust. I'm sitting in front of my campfire now, and I wonder where to go next. What does any of this mean for the rest of humanity? I wish I had answers. I wish I could find one person who would know what any of this means. I can't help but shake the idea that you and I could have come up with answers, Dave. We always worked well together on these kinds of problems. Well, obviously not this exact one, but you know what I mean. We always found solutions to the questions before us. Sure, some of them turned out wrong in the end, but we still learned from it. Does this mean I just need to hold out and all of the infected will just die off? And then hopefully I find other survivors? Does it mean the attack on the stadium was meaningless? Did Neil and I do that? And did Neil end up shot to death needlessly? Could we have just waited it out? Or have some of the infected prepared for this? Are there infected doctors and scientists who saw this coming and have been making plans? I keep thinking about the meteors. They arrived here on rocks from space, and I've puzzled over that. Were they parts of prior planets? How did they get off the other planet where they had been infected, where they had infected an entire population? Did they blow up the planet somehow? I have these dreams of infected people lowering nuclear weapons into the center of the Earth. Of course, that's something out of science fiction. I don't even know if that kind of thing would work. Maybe it would. They were to place them around fault lines or something, but probably not. None of that would work, I'm sure. It's all just science fiction, but at nighttime, in front of a campfire, is the right time to entertain such lunatic stories. Ghost stories. That's what this planet really is. Haunted. A bunch of decaying people with ghosts like me wandering the halls, looking for help, unable to cross over, unable to transition to the next thing, perhaps unwilling. I have a rough destination in mind, Chicago. Whether or not I make it doesn't matter. It's just that I need to have a destination in mind. Chicago's as good as any other city. Not sure when I'll record again, but I'll try. I'll try to document all of this until I can't anymore. Till either I drop dead, or the planet cracks in half and flies into space, or all of these infected spores somehow lift into the air. I don't know. I'm going to watch the stars. And hopefully not have any bad dreams. Good night, Dave. You've been listening to Ovule, a science fiction horror fiction podcast, written, narrated, produced by Brian W. Alaspa. If you would like to check out more of Brian's work, visit his page at amazon.com. He has nearly 50 books and novels available as ebooks and paperback and audiobooks. Check them out today.